On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we look at what life is going to be like for the Raiders without Henry Ruggs. We dive into his DUI, what happened and how it happened in such a good locker room. We also talk about Derek Carr's changing role and how he's evolving as a leader. And we talk to attorney and football writer Drew Davenport, who writes about and talks about the legal process facing Henry Ruggs, what his jail time can look like, and how much this whole thing is going to cost him. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into the nightmares.
There it is! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. He's Soto, I'm RJ. Let's have some fun today. Raiders 5-2. I'm actually back home in Long Beach, Abu Dhabi last show. I will be in New York attending the game, Raiders versus Giants on Sunday. So we'll figure out how we'll do that post-game show, Soto. Maybe you'll have to host and I'll do it from a bar surrounded by Giants fans after we crush their dreams yet again on a cell phone or something. We'll figure it out. And we'll get Rory in here. We need like a three thing going. We'll figure it out. But at a time when most teams that are in our position, they're 5-2, offense is clicking, quarterback's on fire, defense is better than it has been in literally two decades.
Literally.
Normally, a fan base of a team such as that are stoked. This one, not so much. Yeah. A lot of great football stuff we want to talk about, but bigger news, obviously, all the stuff with John Gruden was all that anyone can talk about, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Now the big news, of course, Henry Ruggs, the receiver for the Raiders, if you haven't heard, was in a DUI Tuesday morning about 3:40 a.m. DUI resulting in death. Bail is set at $150,000 in the crash. The victim, he was in a car with a girl and a dog. His car rear-ended another car, 23-year-old Tina Tintor. Apologies. Yeah. And it was a gruesome crash. He was at Top Golf. We assume drinking. Probably went somewhere else before he hit the road at 3:40. He refused an alcohol test or a breathalyzer test, took a blood test. He got a 0.161, double the legal limit, more than twice. Yeah, twice the legal limit. Also, just to cap everything off, had a loaded firearm in the vehicle. Reportedly, that hasn't been an official charge on that yet, but reportedly, he was going 156 miles per hour on Rainbow Road. No, he wasn't on a NASCAR track.
That's a regular street.
Surface street. Now, it's a busy surface street in Vegas, but it's not a highway. It's not an interstate. A surface street. And to cap it all off, just to throw another thing in there, the dog that was in the car with him died too. Just, you know, just to make everything crazier.
What was the dog Raiders, in Henry Ruggs' car?
Yeah, and that dog died. So, just throw another thing in there. So, Soto, no shocker, the Raiders released him today. Henry Ruggs probably going to jail.
Yeah, it's when I heard the report about there being a fatality, I was like, oh shit! And then they're like, I started hearing at first was there were signs of impairment. Okay, well, what are those signs? Was he just being was he woozy? He was just in an accident. What's going on? And then they talk up. Then they said that a blood draw was done within 2 hours of the accident, and he came out a 0.161, which is twice, 0.08 is legally impaired, so he was twice that. And it's a lot of stuff smacked on top of each other, man. It's like he hit the 3-park pass, dude. Like the DUI with death, all right, and then he was going up 156 miles an hour. Topped out at 156, and then he had a gun in the car. It's like, fuck, man. That it's just sad, man. It's really just a sad situation all around. Mostly, it's sad for the victim and her family, because there's no coming. I mean, let's just say it happens to where Henry Ruggs does play again in the NFL some years down the line, and he's able to do something good with his experience and with his notoriety. She's still gone.
Yeah.
You know, she's not coming back, and that family is never going to be able to see her again. And that's a tough one, man. It's tough. I know that, you and I have both lost people before their time that were close to us. And it sucks, man. It sucks that at least, you know, in other circumstances, it was either their own doing or just circumstance with health issues or whatever. Yeah. But this is like somebody's poor decision-making led to this.
Yeah.
So you can pinpoint to one specific thing. If this guy isn't an idiot, like I keep thinking, I know for a fact, because I've read it before, that the NFL Players Association has a hotline for a car service. And they're in every city where there's an NFL franchise. Any city, you can just call up and get a fucking Tahoe or a town car or whatever and get driven, no questions asked, get picked up, get dropped off wherever you're going for free. That's paid for. And it boggles my mind. You know, I was listening this morning to a radio show, and Keyshawn Johnson was saying that this screams of a young athlete feeling invincible.
Yeah.
I can do things that normal people can't do. Okay, well then I'm not normal. So yeah, I can drive 156 miles an hour fucking pissed drunk because I'm not normal. I can do these things.
He had practice the next morning. Like,
it doesn't make any sense.
This is what's, it's like, you just start compounding all the problems here. Like, okay, you know, I'm not going to pretend I'm a saint. Like, I've gotten behind the wheel, and I probably would have blown that level of alcohol before, right?
Absolutely, yeah, me too.
Brain dead of me to do that. Absolutely stupid of me to do that. Whether through dumb luck or a guardian angel or I'm good at driving drunk, whatever it may be. Like, nothing near as tragic this has ever happened.
We were doing 156.
But that's what I'm saying is like, okay, part of me is like, okay, I've done really dumb stuff at 22 years old, but I never even tried to go 157 miles an hour, never had a loaded gun in that car. I didn't have people and a dog in that car. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, just us regular folk and our generally way of thinking, but like the more you have to lose, the less I feel like you should risk. And when you're Henry Ruggs and you're 22 and second year in the NFL, millionaire, you're just starting to produce on the field. Like he was the Raiders' leading receiver in yardage right now this season. Right. And you're just kind of like, hey, buckle down, get your act together, focus on everything. Like this is big. This is my future. And it's just a host of things that don't say, all right, he made a mistake that everyone makes and just got caught. It's this guy had a really bad mentality of what he was doing and why, and you know, a series of crucial, critical, life-changing errors, and not just, okay, a young guy who made a mistake that we've all made.
Going 156 on a residential street, all right, that's stupid already. Going that fast, going 150 miles an hour on a regular street, that's already bad. Doing that after a night of drinking, that's just compounding that. And doing all that with, we've seen it with like Plaxico Burress.
It wasn't like he was in like the backwoods of Alaska. He was in a major metropolitan city. Cabs, Ubers, Lyfts, the NFL has a system. Like, hey, if you're a millionaire in Las Vegas and you know you're going out, why aren't you getting a limo service? Just as like par for the course.
And I understand, hey, let's go to Topgolf, hit a couple balls, whatever. It's not that big a deal where you're not going out to a club, or it's not like a super night out or anything like that. It's just you're just chilling, hanging out. Trust me, if I live that close to a fucking Topgolf, you and I would be there a lot more.
Yeah.
We'd be there like at least a couple times a week.
Yeah. Drinking as much as Ruggs.
Fucking Topgolf driving. Tits.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But it's like this screams. Because you have to look at something too. okay? Mm-hmm. Look at the organization for who he used to play, right? Look at the leadership that you have as players. Look at the leadership you have that was able to overcome that John Gruden incident and solidify everything and come together. Like, he had a strong foundation there. He had guys like Waller, and he had guys like fucking Crosby talking about their issues with substance abuse and alcohol and how to, like, living better and living right has made them a better player, made them a better person. You have Derek Carr, who's fucking, you know, the only alcohol he drinks is the fucking sacrament, that fucking wine every fucking month. Like, that's it's dude, he had people around him on the team making sure that he knew what to do and what not to do.
Yeah,
this is all on Henry Ruggs.
We've been hyping up all how great Ruggs. We've been hyping up how great that locker room's been all season, right? With, like, the stuff they've overcome, the way they love each other, the leadership that's there. Like, you have the czar of football, John Gruden, yanked from there, who had his tentacles and everything, and there was no vacuum left. Everyone filled it up. Bisaccia jumped in, and Carr jumped in, and Gus Bradley jumped in, and 2-0 since he left, and everything's hunky-dory. Like, if any team had a reason to start complaining and saying that there's a problem, it was the Raiders. And yet, what did all this stuff do? Oh, they came together. And she's like, oh, wow, there's a good culture on that team. And it apparently went right over Ruggs' colored hair.
It took me a while to realize this because I was a person who was always trying to help people and, like, talk to them. And, like, people are going to do what the fuck they want to do, regardless of if someone has something stuck in their head or they have a specific type of mentality. In the short term specifically, they're going to do what they want. Now, when you give them words of wisdom, we give people words of wisdom and advice, and then they get away with, like, oh, should have done that? And they think back to those words. That can cause changes in the future, but normally they're going to learn from their own mistakes. They're not going to learn from some other people's words. And, you know, again, Keyshawn said that every season with all the different coaches that he's had in the NFL, going into a bye week, without fail, every single coach has said, don't be that guy. Don't be that guy during the bye week.
Yeah.
Right? Don't be that guy. And
he wasn't even in the bye week anymore. Like, it's you have a road trip on Sunday. Like, there was practice the next morning. Like this isn't even, like, off season and he's getting hammered in the Bahamas somewhere. Like, this is work mode. This is getting a DUI if you're a 9-to-5er, this is getting a DUI on the way home from work on a Tuesday. Like, this isn't, like, vacation time for Ruggs, or it shouldn't have been.
Look, man, who knows now? You've seen the suspect judgment that he has.
Yeah.
Doing all these things compound on top of one another. And, you know, it's going to be this whole thing about, oh, he's never been in trouble before. Someone who's never been in trouble before, who's never done anything wrong before, just doesn't happen to drive twice the legal limit drunk, 150 miles an hour with a loaded gun in their car. They don't just happen to do it. And the first time they do it, they end up killing somebody. They've done it. This is somebody who has poor judgment, who is, from all accounts, from what I'm seeing, is kind of entitled. They feel like they're better than other people. They feel like the same rules and laws don't apply to them because they're famous and they're rich and they're an NFL player and this and that. It's the typical, it's the reason why certain people don't like today's athlete. It just seems, this is just screams that.
The Corvette should have tipped us off.
Oh, that's a douche car. I'm sorry. If anyone out there is driving a Corvette.
Yeah. You should have known.
Yeah. That's
a Corvette.
That's a douche beef. That's a douche beef car.
Like, all right. This guy's going to get drunk and get in a car accident. See that from it.
Oh.
So he's been released, obviously, by the Raiders today. Didn't take them very long to do that release.
Last night they fucking did it.
Yeah. Took them, you know, as soon as they got any, like, you know, enough time to get the information, right? But he gone. And now it's just him in the legal system, moving forward. See where that takes him. But this is the, when you look at a team of 53 players and he's not a leader, but he's a starter and he's, you know, second year player, but a first rounder. And there's a level of responsibility there. These are the kinds of things that put giant bumps in a season's road. But again, I think because of how this team is wired, they're able to kind of digest this. They're almost numb at this point, right? Like, think of all the things that they've had, like all the curveballs they've had, right? They had, you know, Carl Nassib came out of the closet in the offseason, not even a blip on the radar, didn't affect anything. We thought, oh, because that's always been the discussion for the longest time, right? What's going to happen to the locker room when a player comes out? Nothing happened. Raiders handled it, no problem. Start out 3-0. Didn't get cocky, didn't go to our heads, didn't have it like turn into an early version of what happened the last two seasons. John Gruden, we found out what happened to him, and he's gone. They go undefeated since, 2-0 since. Nothing wrong there. Like, these are all things. That locker room is probably numb at this point. They're like, oh, Henry Ruggs got a DUI and maybe killed somebody. All right, that's what's the next one going to be? That's got to be how it feels in that facility.
It's the good thing is they were already in that mode. You know, they were already in that look. We got to, if whatever happens to this team, we're together.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of a different dynamic when it's the coach that's gone because they're not one of the guys on the field. It's a little bit of a different dynamic now because it's a player on the field who's not going to be there anymore.
Just imagine if they did an all season Hard Knocks and it just happened to be the Raiders.
Fucking hell. Dude, I fucking can't. I can't right now.
You can't even?
I don't know, man. Like,
here are the lessons learned, right? Don't go to Topgolf if you're a Raiders player because it's almost cost Jacobs and cost Ruggs, right? With time off, don't do anything. really pay attention to the lessons we've learned from Darren Waller, Max Crosby, guys that have been through real shit and come out on the other side. Like, really pay attention to those guys. And don't let outside distractions get you. There's 53 players on that roster now. Well, you know, there's currently 51, and those next two are going to be filled. I mean, that's all you can learn from this, right? Like, learn from this. Whether you're a football player or not, learn from this. Because it's wise people learn from mistakes. Super wise people learn from others' mistakes.
And the problem is that wisdom normally comes with experience and it comes with age. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys are young, man. A lot of these guys are really young. And they're new to having all this money and they're in a city, and you know, I don't care what city you're in. There's always trouble that you can get into.
Yeah.
You're in fucking Cleveland or something.
Yeah. This isn't something. Vegas is these players. They were at Topgolf.
They were Topgolf, dude. It wasn't like, you know, but it's like,
he wasn't running a train in the back of, you know, Encore, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't like in the VIP suite with
trying to make me feel better.
Yeah. he wasn't on like my bachelor party. You know what I mean? Like,
whoa. We don't talk about that.
Yeah. That's all the only details you get. He was golfing. It's like this whole idea, like, oh, Vegas is going to destroy these players. Like, if you do that after golf, that's a you. Like, you're going to find trouble no matter where you go. So this, a lot of questions about the legalities moving forward. So we brought on literally the smartest guest we've ever had. Here's Drew Davenport. Joining us now, you can follow him on Twitter at Drew FBG Auctions. He does all kinds of stuff for football, fantasy football stuff, but he's also a practicing attorney. He's been practicing law for 20 years and has been dealing in criminal law for a solid chunk of that. He wrote a great article on footballguys.com about everything that's going on with Henry Ruggs. Now, it was done on Tuesday, and obviously a lot has happened since then. We're now recording this on a Wednesday night, so we had to bring him on for the first time. Drew, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Drew.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. This is fun. I appreciate it.
Yeah, next time we'll get you on with a more fun subject, we promise. But yeah. We'll bring you on and definitely one of the darker days, kind of a dark season for the Raiders despite doing well. So we went through all the details already on the show about all the specifics that happened. But now that we're here at 6 o'clock Pacific time Wednesday, what's been the biggest part of this story to you as it's still unfolding, but major things have already happened?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing for me was the details that keep leaking out, because there were some things that I saw initially that didn't make a lot of sense to me when they were talking about signs of impairment, but they didn't talk about necessarily what those signs were and what exactly we're dealing with, whether it was alcohol or drugs or what they thought those signs were. So the details that are coming out now about the blood alcohol, about how he refused the breathalyzer, but then they did a blood draw. So I'll be interested to see that full report, because there are different rules on how you can do blood draws and things like that. And I don't want to get too into the weeds with that. But I think the biggest development today is seeing those aggravating circumstances, because the law itself is pretty harsh on its own because it has mandatory minimums. And that's not something that you see with every violation of law. So there's aggravating factors on top of those mandatory minimums. That's been a big part of what I've seen today.
What are some of those aggravating factors?
Well, number one was the speed. I know we've heard about that by now, but I believe that's a surface street, right? Not a highway.
Yeah, it's a surface street.
Yeah. So he's doing over 150 miles an hour, and apparently the computer says the airbags deployed at 124. That's disgusting on a lot of levels. But yes, that's one of those things where we talk about, as criminal defense attorneys, we talk about mitigation. And oftentimes when we're dealing with a case like this, we realize that we're not going to be going to trial, but that we have to do our best to get a deal, get the charge either reduced or amended somehow. And we also have to be able to go to the judge and say, there are these factors why you should have leniency as far as the sentence goes. And these positive factors that I can say in my client's behalf. Those things really just fall away and they become very insignificant when you have those aggravating factors, the high speed and the high blood alcohol content. It's also my understanding there's a loaded gun in the car. I have not been able, I haven't seen a police report that's confirmed that yet, but that's everywhere. Doesn't mean it's true, but if that's true, that's also an additional aggravating factor. And I have not researched the gun laws in Nevada as of yet. I plan on doing that, but I know that all of those things, when you're trying to make an argument to the judge, like, hey, he's never had a history of this. This is an extremely bad night for him and poor judgment, et cetera, those things don't hold a lot of weight when you have those aggravating factors.
That's what you were saying, Soto. We were debating, I don't think he's going to get a few years. And Soto was like, dude, with the loaded gun, they're going to throw the book at him. And I think,
I was saying, I could see around 12-ish, because I mean, it's already a class B with the DUI with fatality. Then you take the reckless driving and you take, just the blood alcohol level, the speed he was going. And then you add another felony with the loaded gun. I mean, it doesn't look good.
No. And the gun, like I said, I have not researched the gun part of it yet. I've actually been fairly busy all day today since that news of the loaded gun broke. There are, in most jurisdictions, now I don't know this yet, I'm going to take a look at it and I'll be tweeting about it, but in most jurisdictions, there are mandatory punishments for the gun spec as well. And a lot of times those are stacked. So, it could be a couple years on a gun spec, and then it could be a couple years on the mandatory minimum for the DUI itself. You're talking already starting out at 4 or 5 years and going up from there. So I said today, the guy's 22. I said it wouldn't be shocking to see him in prison on his 30th birthday.
Wow. So yeah, you're thinking not just charged with 10, 12 years, actually serving almost a decade or so.
Well, and the thing is, though, that's just a preliminary, just when I'm looking at a case like this, there are a lot of things that are going to go into this case that right now that we don't have access to. Some of the things that his defense attorney will have access to and will be able to bring up and talk about. Mm-hmm. So that may not happen. And that's just an educated legal guess from my time on the job. But I will say that if these factors that have been brought up today turn out to be true, he's not looking at a minimum sentence. Judge is going to give him a minimum on this.
So he's no surprise. He's hired, one of the best attorneys around. He was the same attorney who helped Josh Jacobs with his not DUI that might maybe should have been a DUI situation. Also leaving Top Golf, by the way. Let's be careful. Like,
Jesus.
Let's start drinking some water when we golf, people. This is getting out of hand. So if you're him, right, what is your job now? What are you trying to do? How are you trying to defend Henry? What's your battle plan at this point?
That's a really hard one. The first thing you got to do is get everything from the state, because the details that are leaking out, you have to understand that they're going after the most salacious details to get that into the press so everybody can devour those. So there's going to be some other factors here. I don't know why. I heard that Ruggs was combative and uncooperative at the scene. I don't know what all that's about. There's going to be a lot of information coming in this case that he's going to have to sort through. So that's the first thing you're doing, just information gathering, talking to him, and seeing what our situation is. But if things are like they seem, you're already working on mitigation and saying, what can we do to get us to a charge that doesn't have a mandatory sentence? And you're talking about pretrial diversion. You're talking about treatment options. I think at this point, you're really looking at maybe, does he have a mental health issue that he was self-medicating with alcohol? Does he have an alcohol issue? Are there things that we can fall back on that say, hey, we're going to address these problems, and once we do address them, can we amend the charge? Can we suspend the prison time and do sort of a draconian probation type thing? That's where you're really the. And I don't want to sit here and say that he's guilty, because that is absolutely not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying if these factors are true, that's the way you're headed. But if there's something they can find in the way they did the blood draw to get the blood test thrown out, that's going to be one of the first things you're going to attack as well, to see whether or not they did that correctly. I know in the state of Ohio, there has to be a qualified person that does the blood draw, and sometimes that doesn't happen, and so they can't use it. You know, stuff like that, statements he may have made at the scene, you're going to see whether or not you can get those suppressed. Things like that. You're looking at the evidence and trying to attack the evidence, but if the evidence is strong, like it appears, then you're moving towards mitigation with the judge and with the prosecutor and trying to get an amendment on a charge that doesn't have a mandatory minimum.
You mentioned how the DA is trying to like release stuff to the press, right? Make it as, you know, salacious as possible. How big of a factor is the press in something like this? Because you hear all the time that so many people say like, oh, celebrities, you know, they get off easy. It's like, no, they don't. Like, other than obviously having money to afford great lawyers, I always thought it was the other way, where DAs are like trying to make their name by slam dunking on something like this. Like, no one that runs for office wants to look like they run an office that lets celebrities get away with killing people driving drunk.
Yeah. And the Jacobs case was interesting because there did seem to be a lot of factors that were pointing to his intoxication, but because he didn't have any prior offenses, in those situations, a lot of times you do get a break. But
okay.
The situation here is vastly different. And one of the things that I put in my article, and I know that you talked about reading it, but when you involve a victim in a case, that changes the playing field completely. Yeah. So you have a family, and you've got they've got a right to make a statement, how it's impacted their lives, to lobby the judge. And they'll be all a part of, usually they're going to be a part of the plea negotiations. So as a defense attorney, I have my client, and then the DA has their client, and that's the victim's family. Mm-hmm. So that changes things a lot, and it makes it a lot harder for them to give a deal. But on top of that, it's an optics thing, and you say it exactly right. You can't be the guy who lets Henry Ruggs get away with this. So no matter how much you may say, okay, well, if he's got no history of this and no, you know, history of this kind of behavior, he would normally get a break. This is such a bad case that I'm not sure that's going to matter, and I think the DA is going to feel compelled to go hard.
So let's say Henry Ruggs is your client right now. What would you advise him to do in the short term?
First of all, shut up. Don't say a word. Number two, right away, go get assessed for an alcohol problem and start alcohol treatment immediately, because he's going to bond out. He's going to be out. Yeah. So first and foremost, you cannot get in any more trouble, be seen anywhere in public. Can't be seen at a nightclub. You can't be seen doing anything other than being a choir boy. You go get some alcohol treatment, get into something, maybe go inpatient, whatever the case may be. I would get a mental health assessment, see whether or not there's a mental health issue going on, whether there was some depression that he was treating with alcohol or drugs. And all that stuff can be very persuasive to a court. Like, hey, we found the root cause of why he made these poor decisions that night. Now, sometimes it's a 22-year-old thinking they're invincible, and that could be the case. But right now, I'm advising Ruggs, be quiet, stay out of trouble, stay out of the public eye, and then start addressing these other issues that could be factors that we can go to the judge and the prosecutor and say, he's addressing these problems. He made a huge mistake, but he understands that that was rock bottom, and here's how he's addressing it.
What's this? And that's almost an impossible question, but just your best guess. What's this going to cost Henry Ruggs financially? I mean, fines, bail, jury, a very expensive attorney, I imagine, possibly months, years, like litigation. Like, what's your best guess?
Yeah, well, I was having this conversation with my wife on the way way out of town today. It's a lot, or everything, because not only is this, I mean, yeah, I honestly believe that all of that is secondary to whatever civil suit the family is going to bring, because the attorney, he's going to charge a lot of money. I mean, you know, this may be a $50,000-$75,000 case, but for a guy like Ruggs who's making the money he is, that doesn't matter. I think really it's going to come down to what happens in the civil suit. He's going to get sued. And, you know, I really believe financially it's bleak right now for him.
Like everything?
Like everything else, right?
I mean, it's only his second year in the league. You know what I mean? Yeah. He doesn't have, he doesn't have like 20 years of a nest egg.
My comment just off the top of my head today was, you know, he's going to lose everything. He's going to lose the career, his freedom, his money. That's everything's on the table right now.
He also didn't play 3 years, so he doesn't get a pension either from the NFL. He gets nothing.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
Got to play at least 3 years to get that.
Sad stuff. Sad stuff.
It is.
All right. Well, we'll make it happier next time. His name's Drew Davenport. Our new official legal expert of the Autumn Windbag. So, like, next time Soto gets caught at a rub and tug and we need to call somebody, he's going to call you, Drew. So just be ready.
I was using the bathroom. I was using the restroom. Ask for directions.
Oh, goodness. Just but don't say anything.
Yeah, just shut up. That's your first free piece of legal advice from Drew.
It is. Right. Just be quiet. You know how many times I get a case and I look at the police report and I get 90% of the way through and I think, man, I'm going to beat this case at trial. And then the last 10% is my client admitting everything. So just be quiet.
Sounds like Ruggs at least did kind of the right thing, refused the test and didn't sound like he said anything.
He did.
He said something, but it wasn't
I'm guilty.
He was pissed from what I hear.
Yeah, and I don't understand that stance. That's a little bit odd to me. I'd like to hear more about that. Because again, that's what we're talking about when we talk about mental health stuff. Maybe there's something going on, you know, and maybe there's something that he's not addressing. And I get a lot of cases where people, they don't remember what happened during an incident, or they do something that's completely out of character because they're having a mental health issue or a break that isn't being treated. And so, yeah, I don't understand being argumentative at a scene where you rammed into somebody at 100 miles an hour. So there's got to be more to that. So I'm waiting on that. But yeah, bottom line is he did the right thing by refusing the breathalyzer, but a lot of people were coming at me on Twitter. They're going to do a blood draw. They're going to do a And I said, yeah, I get it. You can get a warrant and get a blood draw. And in some jurisdictions, it doesn't even require a warrant. They can just do it. So he did the right thing, but so did the police. And they got their evidence if they did it right.
All right, give the man a follow on Twitter at Drew FBG Auctions, Drew Davenport, our new legal expert on the Autumn Windbags, whether he likes it or not. Thanks for coming on, Drew.
Heck yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
Got it. Sweet. Appreciate you taking a little time away with the wife away. That's very nice. Yeah. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, man.
That's awesome. Under 20 minutes. I appreciate it, guys.
You got it. Real quick, do you follow MMA or UFC at all?
A little bit, but yeah, not super.
Okay, because I have an MMA show on SiriusXM, and so I was wondering if we ever need a legal expert, do you follow the sport?
John Jones.
I'd have to brush up.
John Jones is all you need to know. Just follow
the UFC would keep you very busy.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, I could absolutely be persuaded to help you out there for sure.
Well, what state do you practice in?
I practice in Ohio. I'm only licensed in Ohio, but I do a lot of, spend a lot of time looking at different states because of the nature of the job now is learning every state's laws when they get charged. That's not easy, but yeah.
Sweet. All right. Go have fun with the wife, Drew. Appreciate you coming on. It was awesome.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
I'm serious, Soto. Next time you get into legal trouble, I'll give you Drew's number. You may need him.
Next
time, you know,
it.
You expose yourself at a middle school or any other weird things that you do. Hey, this is you. I'm helping. This is for
allegedly.
You. You know? Drew's got to learn to
business out in the street.
You got to get licensed in California so you can look out for my boy, Soto.
Oh, I should get trouble in Ohio.
I know. We're going to be, next time we're in Ohio for whatever reason, we're going to be like, yeah, we could, we're going to feel like Henry Ruggs. We can do whatever we want. We're above the law because we got Davenport helping us out. Obviously, just kidding. So, Rich Bisaccia, interim head coach, spoke today, him and Derek Carr on a press conference. And I have really loved Bisaccia since he's taken over. Like, I've fallen in love with this guy.
It's a solid dude, man.
Oh my God. I have a man crush on Bisaccia and the way he's handled everything. Like, he's the perfect guy. We'll talk about, you know, what his role is or who'll be the next coach next season. Like, we'll probably talk about it for fun, but that's like so not on my mind because I feel like he's the perfect guy to handle what's happened to him. Let your coordinators do the bulk of it, right? Don't come in and make sweeping changes, you know, change the color of the curtains in the office. Like, don't be like, all right, it's my team now. It's like, don't do that. But take the reins of leadership when it's needed. And he's always been a coach the man first, coach the player second. And those two things combined of like not being power, like being a leader without being power hungry and treating players like people, both very anti-Gruden and both exactly what we need right now.
Yeah, for sure. You know, he was what we needed with the whole Gruden thing, his temperament, you know, and the thing that everyone said about Bisaccia was everyone in the building respected him and they liked him. It's difficult to do both because a lot of times you have to do things that people are going to hold against you, but everyone likes him. Everyone respects him. He's like, he exudes, like he's like the kind of, like, I'm very particular with my steaks. If Bisaccia is in the back grilling steaks, I'm not even going to go back there. He's got it.
He treats the steaks like one of his players. He treats the cow, not the meat. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Gives them some tender loving that they're needed. So the, like I said, Bisaccia and Carr spoke to the press today. Here's his opening statement, courtesy of our friend Adam Hill. First of all, we want to express our sincere condolences to the victim's family. A person lost their life yesterday morning. We think it's important to keep focused on that as we talk about this tragic event. We're deeply saddened for everyone affected, especially the victim's family. That being said, we love Henry Ruggs. I want him to know that. His terrible lapse in judgment of the most horrific kind is something he will have to live with for the rest of his life. The gravity of the situation is not lost on anyone here. We understand and respect the loss of life. So that's, I mean, what else can you really say other than this is terrible? That was stupid of him. We still love the guy. Like, you know, like, we all have friends and family that have done absolutely dumb, terrible things. And it's like Derek Carr says, you know, you hate the sin, not the sinner, right? You love the man. And that's kind of where they're at right now. And even Derek Carr kind of said, like, I haven't talked to Ruggs since, you know, since all this happened, but if he needs someone to love him, like, so he needs someone to love him, I'm happy to be that guy.
Yeah, it's a tough balancing act because you do want to show support to somebody who you were so close with, but you also have to balance that with the gravity of the situation. I think he did it really well.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things, man. The NFL is like, you know, the king is dead, long live the king. You know, it's like next person up, let's go.
One last thing about Ruggs, and then we'll, you know, this incident, and then we'll move on to football. We've all heard the story. It's been told multiple times. And you see it every time Ruggs scores a touchdown and makes that sign.
Mm-hmm.
He lost his best friend to a car accident in a car he was supposed to be in. They're on their way to a basketball tournament when he was playing basketball. He was supposed to be in that car driving to a tournament. but because he was sick, he didn't go, and he lost his best friend. If there's anybody on the Raiders roster that's like, all right, like, you know, the dangers of, you know, being negligent behind a wheel, we all know what could happen. It should have been Henry Ruggs. It should have been Henry Ruggs.
Dude, I'm telling you that it's this mentality, and it's not just an athlete mentality. There's a mentality of people in general who see things happening around them and don't understand that the only difference between them and the person that a tragedy happened to was timing. It could have definitely been them. And it's just one of those things where you're looking at it and you're like, oh, that's not going to happen to me because I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And it's like, you have to sit back and be like, whoa, whoa. Nobody wants to get into a car accident. They happen because of poor judgment. And if you're using poor judgment, that you're just raising your odds of having an accident. And it's just, it's hard to talk about, man, because, you know, I was in a pretty bad car accident, and the guy with that hit me was just not paying attention. He was looking at his phone and not paying attention. Mm-hmm. And so I know about, you know, accidents changing your life. And it's tough to
used to be a good looking guy, but after the accident, I mean, we can see your face over. And it's done. See, you know, the damage that it took, you know.
Yeah.
That's life altering for you for sure.
I feel bad for Henry Ruggs. I don't feel sorry for Henry Ruggs.
Yeah. Yeah. One more thing, and then we'll move on. And this isn't meant to pick on Jerry specifically, but the Jerry McDonald, the Bay Area News Group, been covering the Raiders for a long time, respected writer. He tweeted something that I just got to get off my chest. He tweeted this yesterday or last night. Ah, Twitter, the place where some, not all, Raiders fans can move on immediately and wonder about the salary cap ramifications, etc., regarding Henry Ruggs. So what he's doing is he's clutching his pearls and being Mr. Holier Than Thou on Raider fans that are like, oh, who's going to replace Ruggs? How does this affect the salary cap? You know, what's this mean for anything on the field? And he's basically waving his finger as a moralist saying, no, that's not to be worried about right now. To which I say,
fuck you.
He's full of shit. And this is
what I say.
One, if Mike Mayock, like, this literally happened at the trade deadline. Like, the trade deadline was today, this afternoon. If Mike Mayock would have said, oh, no, we're not talking any football for 3 days out of respect for the deceased, he'd be fired. He'd be gone. If all of these journalists were like, hey, out of respect for the deceased, we're not going to write any stories about this at all, they'd be fired. They'd be gone. So the idea that's like, well, no, we can't move on to the nuts and bolts of football operations. The whole football, everything football has to come to a screeching halt. Get out of here. Like, that's not. And also, it's like, what is the statute of limitations on grief, Jerry? Like, how long am I allowed? How long am I supposed to be sad before you say I'm allowed to ask who should replace Henry Ruggs on Sunday? And Jerry, what am I allowed to say when that happens? Because, you know, you're the grief police on all this. It's like, get out of here. Get out of here.
The world keeps fucking going, man. Like, the NFL didn't screech to a halt. I'm not trying to minimize what happened here. Someone lost their life. A family lost a family member. Friends lost a close friend. But, dude, the world keeps going, man. Like, my grandpa died on a fucking Saturday, and I had to be on a plane on Monday to Florida. Like, I had to go. I had to work. I there was no one else to do what I had to do at the time.
And I lost my, you know, I lost my best friend a few years ago. I heard the news. So I was doing a 2-hour radio show for Sirius XM. I do the first hour, and there's like a 4-minute break in between the hours. I pick up my phone to like 19 missed calls. Like, oh shit, something happened. Call the first number on there. They tell me Frankie passed away. I hang up the phone, tell my producer, 3, 2, 1, back on air. I had to do another hour of radio immediately after finding out my best friend died, right? Now, I had plenty of time to grieve after. Like, I still went to work the next day, but, like, you know, that night we did. But it's like, if I would have just, like, quit and not did that last hour, Frankie wasn't going to come back to life. It wouldn't have made his mom any less sad. There wouldn't have been that empty bar stool for the next few years, right? So whether, like, we ask about football or not to Jerry or whoever, that's not going to bring the victim back. That's not going to take the booze out of Henry Ruggs' mouth. It literally does nothing, nothing at all. So, and also people grieve in different ways. Like, some people, like, when they grieve, it's like, let me talk about football. Like, let me
internalize it. Let me talk about something else.
Some people need, you know, a week away. Some people, like, hey, I want to go back to work and work twice as much. Keep my mind off of it. Stay busy. Everyone has their way of grieving, and some people don't at all. So the idea that, like, well, no, you need to wait this exact amount of time and do exactly this, otherwise I think you're a piece of shit, is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Curl clutching, holier than thou moralism. Like, get out of here.
It's just people trying to talk shit for no reason. Like, you know what? Like, I can't grieve and do work at the same time. Like, yeah, I can do that. I can grieve and still think about the future of the Raiders franchise. Like, it doesn't mean I can't do anything else but grieve when I'm grieving.
That's what professional sports is an escape from our daily life and an entertainment and something that we do outside of our normal lives. Like, this is our safe space and this is our bastion. And when something terrible happens in that safe space, everyone deals with their own way. So with that said, how do the Raiders move forward without Henry Ruggs? We're going to talk about it. So now the Raiders now have 51 of 53 roster spots filled. They're down to only 3 wide receivers, which is crazy when you think about it, right? Like, when you look at our preseason roster, it was loaded with receivers. Like, oh man, we got so many. Which ones are we going to get rid of?
7 receivers,
yeah. Now it's just
Hunter Renfro,
and Zay Jones. That's it, right? And it feels like Zay Jones is just going to take that Z spot, right? Like, it's, you know, and it's an offense where the receivers can line up different places and do your different things. But in a very simple way, I can imagine Greg Olsen, when he's like redoing his game plans, like, okay, we're going to start with basically just putting Zay in Ruggs' spot. We'll still mix and match and we'll go from there, but we're just going to do that. What's crazy, considering how many good wide receivers we had in the preseason, right? We like Willie Snead and John Brown and, you know, all these guys that we picked up. Now we're down to 3. Yeah. 3 guys. That's nuts. Now, with that said, on the practice squad, and of course, Bisaccia said they're going to bring 2 up off the practice squad. You got Marcel Aitman, Dylan Stoner, Javon Wims, and DJ Turner. Do you go forward with our 3 starters that we have left and a combination of those 4 practice squad guys? Are we set for the year with that combination?
No, there's not enough talent there. There isn't. Even with the 3 guys that we have that are on the roster right now, there's not enough talent there. The problem is, guys that run 4.2, you know, don't grow on trees. You can't just pluck them and insert them into your lineup. He had a specific set of skills that made him very unique in the NFL and made him a very important cog in our offense. It's going to be tough, man. It's going to be tough. You know, DeSean Jackson's out there. He was released. There's been some rumor of
John Brown, which we had on the roster.
Yeah, who knows what the hell he's been doing, though.
I don't know what happened to him. We had him on the roster, cut before the season, right? He's got preseason, right?
Yeah. He was cut after the last preseason game.
I mean, and he had a good resume. Like, he had a better resume coming in than Nelson Aguilar came in to the Raiders.
Yeah, for sure.
Similar, like, playing style. I think maybe the writing on the wall was just simply like, John Brown's like, okay, we're committed to Henry Ruggs. You're not going to be a starter. Yeah. And John Brown's like, oh, I can do better than that. And then couldn't.
Nothing.
I'm hoping it was that as opposed to, like, the wheels just came off or he's terrible now, right? Because he's still out there. And obviously, yeah, he's semi-familiar with the system, being part of the preseason crew. Like you said, he's out there. DeSean Jackson recently is out. He's still a speedster, even though he's 35.
Yeah, he's still a speedster. He's
something like that. And then everything that's going on with Odell Beckham Jr. So according to Jordan Schultz, sources, Saints and Raiders have displayed interest in Odell Beckham Jr., who has currently cut contact with head coach Kevin Stefanski. Cut contact! The Browns could still release him, allowing him to then sign elsewhere. Even after his excused mispractice, I'm told OBJ plans to play Sunday. I don't see how you plan to play Sunday when you're just not talking to the head coach and bailing on practices.
It's like, it wasn't like he, hey, guys, Stefanski, look, man, I'm not going to come into practice today. I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. He just didn't show up, and the Browns are like, all right, don't worry about it. Yeah. We'll excuse it. Where was OBJ?
So, obviously, talent-wise, he'd be great on the Raiders. I'm just wondering if that kind of attitude that he's, you know, famous for would be more trouble than it's worth on a team with a lot of really good chemistry.
That's the kind of team that you can put someone like that on.
You hope to. You hope it changes them for the better, and he doesn't change the team.
No, I don't think he'll change the team at this point. They've been through too much together to let one player torpedo everything. Mm-hmm. I think, like I said before, is those type of players stand out if they don't fall in line.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be like he's going to garner all the support for him being a knucklehead. If he is one, we've seen it before where people go to certain places who have fizzled out or worn out their welcome at other teams, and they go to a more stable environment and they perform better. It may come down to just better communication, better communication where, Carr is there and says, hey, man, here's what I plan to do with you. What do you like? Where do you feel comfortable? Where do you feel you excel? Here's what I see. Olsen says the same thing. Bisaccia says the same thing. Here's how we want to use you. Here's what we want to do for you. Here's what we're going to do to help be in the OBJ business, right?
Yeah.
And then I don't see any one of those three guys, Carr, Olsen, or Bisaccia, being a liar at telling him something, just fluffing him and telling him something that's not going to happen. I think that they're focused. They're not focused on the peripherals. They're not focused on how do we manage him. We're not focused on winning football games. And if OBJ can help them win football games, I think they'll be able to get it done.
The good thing going for the Raiders is I have to imagine any free agent wide receiver will be breaking down doors to be on the Raiders roster right now. Like, you've got your number one receiver spot open with, Ruggs, again, led the team in yards. Like, there's a number one guy waiting. Derek Carr is playing lights out. He literally turned Nelson Aguilar from an afterthought into a $22 million quarterback. We're 5-2 in a wide open division in the AFC, which is wide open. Like, if your defense is playing better than it has in two decades, like, if you're a receiver out there, you should be on the phone right now with your manager saying, get me on the Raiders. I need to be like, whatever it takes, pay cut, I don't care. Get me on the Raiders. I'm ready to turn my career around and go from all the 1 year players on the Raiders right now that are playing lights out after afterthoughts, right? Like multiple defensive tackles, Casey Hayward. Like, this team is going places with a bunch of randoms, it seems. Offense especially. Like, for a receiver, this is a dream destination, Las Vegas. And, oh, yeah, no income tax. Christ, man. How's Mayock's phone not ringing off? It better be ringing off the hook right now.
Who knows if
those agents are worth half what they're getting paid, they are knocking on Mayock's office door, doing it personally to say, like, make sure you don't get anyone else. I'm the most serious. This is a dream destination for a receiver right now.
If you're a receiver, you want to go, and you have a choice between the Saints and the Raiders. Who's going to throw you the ball with the Saints? Jameis Winston just tore his ACL.
Yeah, you want Taysom Hill being your guy?
You got Taysom Hill. You got fucking Trevor Siemian. Like, yeah, that's who you want throwing you the ball?
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Cam Newton. Dude, that guy can't fucking throw either. Mm-hmm. That's why he didn't fucking work with the Patriots. I don't know why they keep bringing his ass up. The last time I saw that motherfucker couldn't throw the ball. But dude, it you're gonna be in a system that takes advantage of what you do well. What does OBJ like to do? You see those highlight catches, those 50-50 balls. Like, That's what we throw a lot of. Yeah. And we set it up with the routes that we run and the progression of routes that we run, and we set up the defense to get you those matchups as a receiver to be able to be one-on-one and just you. I mean, if going to the Raiders, I'm convinced that once you put that uniform on, you just feel like a little bit more of a badass. You know, like at the gym, I tell people, like, oh, this is my first day. I've never done anything before. All right, cool. Let me wrap your hands for you. And I say, you know what? Once you wrap your hands, you're 40% tougher. Once you put the wraps on, that you're 40% tougher than when you walked in. You just feel it. You just feel tougher.
When I put on my cowboy hat, I'm 37% more confident when I enter a strip club. It's all the same thing.
Dude, you sit down, and within 2 minutes, a chick's on your lap wearing your cowboy hat.
Yep. It's like fishing with dynamite. It's not even fair. So that's everything Ruggs-wise. Now, here's something I wanted to get to. But we really should do more shows because we try to squeeze a lot into just our Wednesday show and our post game shows. Let's
do more shows then, baby.
Maybe we'll start doing it. So Derek Carr did a great interview on the Harvester podcast last week. It feels like a lifetime ago. It was last week.
Jesus.
And it was interesting because he's basically getting interviewed by like his childhood neighbor and his friends. Like that, you're like, how did this random podcast get Derek Carr? Well, because they're childhood friends. So it was like him with a bunch of young kids, you know, talking to him. And it was great. But first, I want to get to what Carr said at the press conference today. So he was asked about, and this is, I'm telling a story here about like the advancement of Derek Carr as the leader and his role in all this. So here's Derek Carr when he was asked today at the presser about kind of where the team is mentally right now with everything that's going on. Gruden, Ruggs, et cetera.
From a football aspect, I mean, we're ready to go. You know, we had a great practice. You know, we're dealing with a lot of things this year. That's for sure. A lot of guys, just what a crazy year. You know, I heard that a couple times. You know, I heard, goodness gracious, you know, like, man, you know, just like, can we please, nothing else, you know. Not for our own sake, but just for the sake of everyone else, you know, just for everyone involved, you know. But from a football aspect, from a competitive aspect, we're ready to play football. There's no doubt about that. You know, we know where we're at from that standpoint, and we know what we have to do. We know that this was a time of year where we hit a lull a couple times, you know, and we can't let that happen, no matter what's going on. And me and 9-1, me and Jan say it to each other every day. Nobody cares. You know, at the end of the day, nobody cares what we're going through, how your body feels. Nobody cares. We got to do our job.
It's exactly what I want to hear to the T, to the letter. It's like, hey, that, you know, this hit us. Obviously we're not going to lie. You know, we're just like, God, like, when is this going to stop? When are we going to stop getting our ass kicked, you know, handed to us in life these days? But we have football to play. We have practice like normal. You know, unlike Jerry McDonald, we're not going to sit around and not do our job and complain. We're going to like get to work. We're going to do our stuff, right? We're going to get ready to rock. And it's, what do we need to do? And also that lingering problem that we've talked about the last two seasons, coming after a bye, after a good record midseason, is when the Raiders go. So it's not even just, I'm just, you know, everything is sunshine and rainbows. It's also, yeah, we have this big problem to worry about that we got to deal with. It's exactly what I wanted to hear from Carr.
And I don't think we expected anything different from Carr, from the team. I think that it's weird how things work out, man. It's weird how things happen. This would have been something that would have been soul crushing if Gruden was still the head coach, I believe. Yeah. I think with the Gruden thing happening and the team kind of, you know, coming together even more and rallying around each other and having that positive mindset, not that victim, woe is me mindset, everyone's against us. It's like, no, things are happening, but we still are a good team and we're still going to make it happen. That the whole Gruden thing kind of prepared them to have this not be such a big blow. it's like, oh crap, now this happens. It's like, well, you know what? We've went through something bad,
yeah,
already, and we were better for it. We can keep our heads down, push forward, and still put out our best effort. And I think that the fact that you're going to see a little bit of a new team coming out offensively, because they, you know, the bye week, they've been able to kind of make it a little bit more Olsen Carr-esque and get away from some of the Gruden stuff. I don't think that we're gonna see that lull offensively that we saw around this the game 7, game 8, 9 mark that we had the last couple years, because teams aren't going to be able to key in on specific things that Gruden made pretty apparent with his tendencies.
It feels so weird to say that the Raiders are an organization that can handle this, because it's been an organization in chaos for so long, right? The front office is in shambles. It's been, you know, Derek Carr's on his fifth head coach in 8 seasons. You know, offensive coordinators, problems, firings, poor seasons, a mess at the front office. Al Davis was on his, like, basically, like, obsolete but still running the team for years. And then Mark Davis comes in. It's like all these problems. You're like, all right, this organization in shambles. But right now, this is an organization that can handle it. Almost getting strength from it in a weird way. Like, their two best games were the two games after Gruden resigned. And I get it. It was the, you know, the Eagles and, you know, the Broncos. But still, like,
bro, they've lost to worse teams than that.
They lost the worst team than that this season.
The fucking, right? Falcons, like, last year, they fucking lost to those. They got the
breaks. We lost to the Bears this season, who are worse than both those teams. So it's, yeah, like, to be able to bounce, like, this is randomly, out of nowhere, believe it or not, a team that can handle this stuff. We've talked a lot about Derek Carr being a leader by example, but not really like a rah-rah vocal leader. Here's Derek Carr on the Harvester podcast about that.
You know, when Gru was here, he was such a voice. I didn't have to say as much.
Right.
You know? Because he was going to correct everything, yeah, about everybody. You know, he was going to push people, motivate them. And I still do, and I still did. But I've seen this thing grow in me that I just hold people to a certain standard, you know. And I challenge them to hold me to that standard, too. I'm like, if I miss it, tell me. Derek, put it right here. I'll catch it every time. Okay, perfect. So when I do, you better catch it.
Right.
You know, same thing with them. Hey, you're better than that. You know, you got to make that play. Or that. All of those things. Hey, run it like this. You run it like this, I'll throw it here, we'll make the play.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, tackle the guy, because I don't want it picked off. You know? But it's been heightened, obviously, with everything in the last few weeks. But I've seen myself grow to hold people to that standard, and I've seen our play get better. So it wasn't natural for me at first, because I just want to play football and be everybody's friend. It hit me. I won't say when, but it hit me at one point. I was like, I'm not here to be everybody's friend.
Yeah.
If you're my teammate, you're my teammate.
Yeah.
If we're friends after this, awesome. I had to come to the realization, because what is really inside of me is pushing people and holding them to that standard.
Yeah.
And so I had to realize I'm not going to be for everybody. And that's hard for my personality, because I want everyone to like me.
Mm-hmm.
But I came to the realization that not everybody's going to like me. I'm not for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that, because I'm going to challenge you to be your best.
So I love that.
You're not for anybody, so you get it. Like, no one gets it.
That's one of the things that I brought up that Carr needed to change. He needed to challenge Gruden more, right? Remember I said that?
Yeah.
He needed to fight, because the good quarterbacks that Gruden had, like, Gannon fought with Gruden and screaming at each other all the time. I don't like this. I don't like that. You need to give me the play quicker. You need to do this. We need to do that. We need to do this more. This is not going to work. We need to play this way. That I was looking for that from Carr. I was looking for that progression from him to be more of a leader, because that kind of soft, unspoken thing from your quarterback, unless you're fucking, you know, putting up Kurt Warner fucking numbers or Tom Brady numbers, that's not going to happen. Like, you need to get in people's faces, especially, and I'm not saying this is fault, but especially when you haven't won. You don't have that resume on you that you've won this, you've done that. You have to be in people's faces. You have to challenge people to be better. And that's what I was getting at when Gruden becomes more predictable, or Gruden keeps grinding these fucking, want to grind these 7, 8, 9 fucking minute drives out. And it's like, dude, that's not our fucking personnel. Our personnel is quick and fast, and we have these players. We have these horses. They got to let them run. You know, Peacock got to let me fly, you know? And it's like, that's what I wanted from him when it, as it related to Gruden and not being that good little soldier, but like, hey, being more of a, like a leader. And with Gruden gone, like he said, it gave him the opportunity to be more of that. And I see this being an extreme positive for the entire franchise.
Well, one, Peacocks don't fly.
I know. It's from freaking that, whatever that movie is, the other guys.
Two, the more, like with Gruden being gone and Carr playing outstanding, people are like, oh, wow, was Gruden holding Carr back as a quarterback, as a passer?
Yes.
Now the question should be like, was Gruden holding Carr back as a leader? Because if Carr's going to, like, I don't think Gruden, I don't think it would work well if Carr was yelling at Gruden. Because Gruden wouldn't, like, he's got an ego and he's got this sense about him and this kind of, like, domineering sense about him. He's like, he doesn't operate when people don't worship him, when they don't do what he says. Like, he would cause more problems that way. But with Bisaccia and a grander locker room and the resume that Carr has, and he's like, hey, I can say what needs to be said, even if it hurts someone's precious feelings, especially the head coaches.
Yeah. I mean, you can yell at Gruden as long as you're right. Gruden challenged Carr a bunch of times. You know, we talked about the play in against the Ravens the first week. He checked out of a play and threw that pass to Zay Jones. And Gruden's like, why did you change the play? Why did you do that? He said, oh, you told me on this day or whatever, it's like, if I ever see this, I have to do this. So, you know, as long as you're right, I'm sure you can challenge Gruden. And I don't see Derek Carr doing something like that unless he knows he's right. But I mean, that's besides the point now, but the way he's playing and how active of a leader he's being right now, instead of being more of a passive leader, that accountability, that's how you make a change in a culture of a franchise, is accountability. And, now that your leader on the field is holding everyone accountable, And it's also how those players take that accountability as well. And if it goes both ways, if they can hold Derek Carr accountable and him not take it the wrong way, that's going to be really good for this team moving forward.
So we're already running late. Do you want to just do our Giants? Because, yeah, oh, by the way, we're heading to New York this Sunday playing the Giants after our bye week. A team that was played neck and neck with the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday Night Football, by the way. So we're traveling after a bye week, but it's a short week for them in a home game. Let's just do another pregame preview separately just for YouTube, like we've done before. We'll have it out Saturday, just cool, to make sure that we get it all. But we do have time for some What Up Winbacks. Everyone with that slide. First
let's
one.
Do it.
Jerry West. I think we're a little too hard on Jacobs. Every time Jacobs is on the field, Raiders are a much better team. Gruden was running him to the ground and using all his mileage, causing him to get hurt often. I don't know if I buy that. Again, so this is talking about last show. We were like, all right, Josh Jacobs, not, you know, weird injury. He can never go through a season without getting hurt. You know, I don't think we should extend him after his rookie contract's up. It's going to be so expensive for a guy that's probably not worth it. He's not the yards per carry leader on the team right now. He wasn't the yards per carry leader on the team last year. Devontae Booker was. He hasn't been the best back, at least by carry, for a while. And he can't stay healthy for a season. And he's only basically a two-down back because he doesn't really catch out of the backfield on third downs. Again, I like Josh, but that was his one. That was one thing that he was supposed to be, right? A guy from the SEC who wasn't a starter, so he didn't have all the wear and tear of playing up, you know, playing against SEC defenses, you know, seven times a season. He was supposed to be the durable guy, the bruiser, like bam, 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 and he's that kind of runner, but he doesn't have that durability. And if you're not gonna, if you're gonna be a two down back that gets hurt all the time, got a really low ceiling as a running back. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that with this new offensive regime, we're going to be able to use Drake more. The way he's been used this last couple of weeks has been phenomenal. I don't know why Gruden wanted to go out and get Drake, because he wasn't using him at all, really. He had, what, one carry the week, the last week against the one touch, excuse me, against the Bears. Six plays and one touch. It's fucking ridiculous. I can see him being a very good kind of a 1A or a 1 to Drake's 1A, but there'd be a lot more split than what we've seen already. Mm-hmm. That's gonna cut into his value and his pay. But I don't think, given his injury history, he's going to go somewhere and be this, you know, bell cow back for anybody.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, well, he was running him to the ground. Like, that's what he was brought in to do. That is the style of running back that he is. 25 carries in between the tackles, hurting people. Like, that's his job. It's like, oh, man, they're wasting Derek Carr's arm on all these deep passes. It's like, that's what he's fucking supposed to do.
That's what he does.
Like, oh man, you're wasting the mileage on my Porsche by driving it so fast. It's like, that's what I was supposed to do. Like, well, I don't know what you want. Sean Tuttle. Actually, Max Crosby is second in pressures to Yannick Ngakoue, who is now the top man in pressures. We have number one and number two in pressures. So we said last time that
you said last time.
Well, like I said last time, it depends where you look. Crosby leads the league in pressures on Pro Football Focus, while Ngakoue leads in NFL's Next Gen Stats, right? The main takeaway is that we have the number one and two. But the reason I brought this up specifically was it's a good reminder that there's hard stats in football. Passing yards, turnover ratio, time of possession. Like, there's objective statistical facts of, you know, what happened in a football game. And that's what I try to base everything on the most, because they're not made up by some crazy, you know, some dude on a laptop in Birmingham that like comes up with these numbers. But that's why you look at like PFF records and like Next Gen Stats and things like that. That's where it turns into like, what is exactly a pressure? Like, does that count as a pressure or not? Depends who's running the board at that moment, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's important to remember. That's why I always try to keep all those like subjective stats to a minimum and the objective stats as in the forefront as much as possible. Because, you know, I swear PFF survives by when they rank someone high on a team, all the fans love PFF and they think it's the best. When they rank someone crappy, everyone's like, oh, PFF is trash. It's worthless. I can't believe they rank this guy that low. Like, I try to stay away from both, right? It's just like, you're either for it or you're against it. Right. And there's value there. Like, I look at PFF's record, you know, Pro Football Focus's, you know, record for somebody or, you know, a rating for somebody. It's like, okay, let's see what they say. And that's part of the equation in my mind, but it's never a hard stat. It's never something super factual, because you end up like this, where depending on where you look, a guy has a higher or lower pressure rate, which for a stat guy like me, it makes my brain bleed. Mm-hmm.
I feel personally attacked by that PFF statement. I feel you were talking directly to me.
I was, yeah. They I think they call those passive aggressive. I was trying to be aggressive with that. Mm. Interesting. Chris H, you guys are worrying way too much about garbage time points against clear prevent defense late. I have no problem with prevent up three possessions. We just let them run the clock out on themselves. Now, if we gave points on sub 2 minute drives, then I'd be very worried. We basically already run a prevent defense in a way, like our three deep, four or five DBs. Like, that's kind of how we are normally. And if it's working, you stick with it. So, like, you know, we were worried about how, you know, we've given up back to back multiple touchdown games in the fourth quarter. That's not acceptable. Like, that's not okay. Even if we are up really far ahead, you know, it's still, you still got to play, you know, the defense that got you to that point in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I feel like we're going into cruise control a little bit too early.
Yeah.
We let the foot off the gas offensively and we just kind of sagged back defensively. And it just, it's not smart because you can outthink the room and, you know, let somebody back in. It was a two possession game against the Eagles, and there was a lot of time left on the clock.
Yeah.
So ball, funny bounce here, funny turnover there, something weird happens, and
they're right back there,
in it.
Yeah.
They're right back in it. So, I mean, it's just not something I'm not a big fan of the prevent defense. I feel like, like you said, I've been saying that we already play a form of it, and we make people inch the ball down the field. I don't see why we have to make so many changes in our defense. And it's, and also offensively, we just turn into a different team, and we turn into more of a Gruden-esque style team that run and pump the ball, you know, that mm-hmm. tango offense, 1-2-3 kick. And it's not who we are. We need to play to our strengths and know our identity.
So we'll do a YouTube only preview show for the Giants, because there's a lot to look at. You know, okay, it's the lowly Giants. There's a lot to look at this specifically on the Raiders side. How are we going to play without Ruggs? How are we going to bounce back, like, mentally from all this? The Raiders are 0-4 after a bye week since 2017. We're coming off a bye week. The Raiders have fallen apart midseason when they're doing well and winning games. Are they going to do that happy? Like, don't look at this as just kind of like, all right, there's not a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. Not so much what the Giants are going to do to the Raiders, what the Raiders are going to do themselves. So that's a little teaser for what we're going to talk about on Saturday's show. I wonder how we're going to do that. Should we get Rory and, like, Rory can host it with you, and maybe I can just kind of come in as a third guy in case I get, like, a bottle broken over my head in New York from a Giants fan.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that would make for a great show if I was assaulted by a Giants fan after a game during our post game show. I mean, I'm gonna try to instigate that.
Ask around.
Yeah. Is it that hard to get attacked at a bar in New York? I don't know. Asking for a friend. See what can happen.
So I was in Boston, and I was wearing a Dodger hat, and I'm just kind of just sitting in the bar or whatever. And I asked a question. I asked, like, you know, how do I get here or whatever, or what's going on with that, or what's there to do around here? This chick's like, hey, Hollywood, you're blocking the TV. So I could have gotten into a fight that night.
With the chick?
I probably would have lost. She was pretty big.
You would have lost to that chick.
Yeah, she was kind of mean too.
You do ooze Hollywood.
I had a Dodger hat on. That's why she said it, I think.
No, it's you in general. It's fine manicured nails of yours, the waxed eyebrows,
the skinny jeans.
Skinny jeans.
The Chucks, no socks.
The t-shirt that says fresh, but spelled with a PH. That's you. Pink scarf.
send dog pics.
That's a shirt I would rock.
I would rock that shirt too, honestly.
We need to start doing some Windbags merch. Do some sweet Raider gear. But until that happens, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Auto Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you tune in on Saturday on YouTube only for our Giants versus Raiders preview. And thank you to our guest, of course, Drew Davenport. It was awesome. Until next time. Later.